Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar here with you on a very beautiful, sunny Monday, which is totally abnormal for us. You know, it's very cool to be here in the afternoons and to be with all of you in your cars. And I have to tell you, one thing we do on the Kaufman Show is we play a lot of very interesting music. And you never know what you're going to hear on this show. You might be the new Tragically Hip single, might be something from Arkells, who are one of the great young bands in this country right now. It might be Tina Fey rapping.
What?
What, Jay? Come on. We've never heard Tina Fey rap on this
show
before?
I have not.
Really? Maybe you're not listening. Maybe you're not paying attention. Because when Tina Fey raps, you should pay attention.
Man, don't watch me watch TV. Wait, Tina on that too. God damn. Man, we're getting that white people money. You heard that? Matter of fact, Tim Teddy. What I'm talking about one time.
Yeah, we in here. We in this thing. Gambino is forever. Royalty is forever. We ballin' so we f***ing up the hardwood, homie. This is the life we live, son. My president is black and my Prius is blue, motherfucker. Royalty all day. We dropping racks at Nordstrom, son. That's racks on racks, damn it. You feel me? You feel me? This is the part where most people would say something crazy and drop the N-word after it. Not going to. Not gonna do that. I don't feel comfortable. I'm out.
That is Tina Fey doing a cameo on Childish Gambino's new mixtape, Royalty. Childish Gambino, of course, is Donald Glover, who got his chops writing on 30 Rock. He is Troy on Community and a very good rapper in his own right. Where did I find this craziness? From our next guest, of course. Richard Deitch is a reporter and writer at Sports Illustrated. He's also a professor at Columbia University, and he likes Tina Fey rapping. Obviously, we're big fans. Good evening, Richard. Welcome to the program.
Wow, that may be the first time ever that I have been introduced not only with like some explicit graphic lyrics, but Tina Fey dropping those lyrics. So I appreciate that intro. Thank you.
Like I said to you in the email, if you agreed to come on the show, I would play you in on that. It blew my mind when you tweeted it out this week. Rarely do you see people step outside of the genre like that, and she nailed it.
Well, let's put it this way. I'm always on alert whenever Tina Fey drops the mother effer line. So if this happens again, I will alert you, Dave.
6:15 on TSN 990. We're with Richard Deitch, and he just dropped a Tina Fey line. It was quite the arduous task going through and taking out all the beeps. It kind of dictated that I had to leave out three quarters of the Gambino song.
Yeah, that's the one thing about the Tina Fey drop there is that it really is. It might still be not safe for work, even with the beeps. so it makes it tricky to play at least at some work environments. But I'm with you. In all seriousness, when Tina Fey is really smart, because this goes for anybody in music, anybody in acting, even sports sometimes. When you go against type and you do it really well, people really, really appreciate that. That's kind of why John Hamm is a really good example of a guy, obviously plays Don Draper on Mad Men, pretty serious role. So when he does comedy stuff, I think he gets a lot of props because it's just he's going against what you traditionally think of, and that's why Tina Fey, who's managed her career pretty brilliantly, is really smart here because she's doing something unexpected. It's kind of cool, and it gives her that much more relevancy, so props to her.
I'd say that happens once every few years on SNL with an athlete. Peyton Manning was able to do it. Michael Phelps was not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and I think one of the reasons for that is Peyton Manning is far more comically gifted naturally than Michael Phelps. You know, Phelps, he is what he is. He's do I want to call him a boring interview? No, but he's not the greatest interview.
Fairly one-dimensional. Yeah,
I would agree with that. And Manning, you know, listen, there are some athletes who are just very, 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 very one, press savvy. And two, can be very self-deprecating or just half flamboyant. So in Peyton Manning's sense, he's very self-deprecating. He's got great comic timing. Guy like Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, total natural character. You know, if you follow him on Twitter or something like that, he's funny. And he's just sort of naturally funny and crazy and surreal, and that's not something you can coach. Phelps, though, you know, you do have to think of it. They are marketed differently, and that is – pretty important. Michael Phelps almost has to come off as sort of some kind of, you know, I don't know, like Americana or boy next door-ish. I mean, that's sort of what the Olympics represent. Peyton Manning is an NFL quarterback. He can push the envelope a little bit more, can be a little bit more risque, I think, than Michael can.
That's true. We're obviously going to leave out the part with Phelps and the bong when we discuss that story then, right?
Yeah, that, I don't believe that was part of the marketing plan, last I checked.
I want to talk to you, Richard, about, well, when I asked you to come on the show, the next morning you got into a, I guess we can call it a Twitter war, can't we?
Yeah, we can definitely call it a Twitter war. That's, I mean, it's silly for an adult to be in a Twitter war. I'm the first to admit that, but but sometimes you really just can't help yourself. I have to be very honest.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because he seems like such easy pickings, especially, you know, considering we know your opinion. We know that his opinion isn't really worth salt. And it just, I wondered what the, what your goal was when you sent out that initial, when you lobbed the first shot, if you will.
At Mr. Rovell?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that was very nice of you to call him Mr., by the way.
Yeah, I'm just being polite for a Canadian audience. yeah, basically, I mean, we've had a long-standing disagreements on Twitter for a long time on many different subjects. I mean, tennis, to be quite blunt, is just it's the medium that we seem to use for larger disagreements about Twitter. You know, I do think, listen, Rovell is obviously very popular on the medium, and there's a reason for that. He does provide oftentimes information and factoids that are interesting. But he does, at the same amount of time, just throw out some absurd generalizations, really not based in reporting. Occasionally some tweets that are like borderline, like you can't believe he's sort of doing it. I mean, like going after a 14-year-old spelling bee contestant to you know, grading the quality of Playboy Playmates at a party, which I think still defines any logic. So yeah, we have sort of battled on tennis, where he said that the sport is in serious trouble in the U.S., didn't really back up as to why that is. And my contention, obviously, is that, listen, I don't think tennis is the NFL or anything like that. No sane person would say that. But I'm not sure the sport is in quote-unquote trouble if the U.S. Open is selling out every year. As we saw now, the Wimbledon numbers for ESPN were records. I just think that's just factually not correct. So we've gone back and forth. You know, occasionally it's sort of taken, you know, and probably this is my fault, you know, sort of a cheap, shoddy turn. But this is what happens on Twitter, and I'm the first to admit that I'm certainly guilty of it. You know, you get in the moment, you don't have an editor behind you, and you sort of just fire off stuff out of emotion and passion. Now, I understand it makes for a good Twitter war, but it's not always, you know, the smartest philosophy. I will say this, though, and just to be totally blunt. You know, every time I'm in one of these quote-unquote Twitter wars, and yeah, I haven't had many, I've had a couple, you gain like an immense amount of followers. And it just seems to prove to me that, there's – I don't know what it is. There's something about Twitter that people seem to like, and you know, they like watching car wrecks or something like that. So it is weird. I mean, if I really like wanted to get a strategy to get like, you know, 100,000 followers, I probably should just – you know, spend my day challenging people with more followers than me.
But isn't that scary? And frankly, that's one of the big reasons that I wanted to bring you on tonight, Richard, is because as much as I love Twitter, sometimes it terrifies me. And I see that it's become the new medium, like the number one medium for journalism, especially sports journalism, but journalism as well. And you see the best and you see the worst, but it's totally changed the way that we absorb news, the way that we look at stories, the way that we disseminate information.
It is. It's by far, in my opinion, the best information resource that I've ever seen, because it allows information to come directly into your inbox, and basically, you know, you can you could cultivate, not cultivate is not the right word, but you can collate basically whatever kind of information you want into your inbox as opposed to searching for it. So if I'm a fan of the BBC, The Economist, and, you know, a rock and roll writer, the fact that I can get all those essentially in my inbox, or I'll call this my feed, is kind of amazing and time-saving, and it really makes you a more educated consumer. So my feed, the number one principle of my feed has always been to tweet out interesting links, and far beyond sports. I mean, I think a lot of people have niches on Twitter, and I think that's great. That's not me. If I read something that's about Darfur that I find interesting, I'll tweet it out. If I read something about Steve Nash I find interesting, I'll tweet it out. So I think when done right, it could really be an incredible resource. The downside of this, because it's essentially a meritocracy, and because it allows you to basically have access, unless you're blocked, to pretty much anyone in the world, you know, it can be a pretty scary Wild West place, because there are a lot of people who troll people out there. There are a lot of people who drop racist and sexist comments all the time. And, you know, there's really no filter for that, or there's no filter for that until Twitter sort of, I think, gets a little better at preventing the trolls. I think the good far outweighs the bad, but there is a Wild West element to it in that, you know, you really do get a lot of people out there who are, for lack of a better word, kind of hate trolling.
Now, we're in conversation with Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. He is their media critic. You're also going to be covering the Olympics, I imagine, Richard?
I am, yeah. No, and actually not in a sports media capacity, which I'm very happy about.
In what capacity, then?
Well, I'll be doing a lot of different things from, you know, whether going out and covering badminton or table tennis, archery, some of the minor sports, and I'm sure I will probably do the guide. We have a daily guide to the Olympics where basically it's kind of a breakdown of everything, you know, geared towards an American audience, but everything Americans should be paying attention to on that day, specific times when events are happening, why we should care about that, et cetera. So while I may do a media story on how NBC is doing, I won't be covering NBC on a day-to-day basis. For one thing, I'll be in London. And for the other thing, I think it's for me, it's a nice break to sort of get away from the sports, from the daily sports media kind of stuff.
Do you prefer, I don't know if prefer is the right word, but do you enjoy doing the sports media stuff, or do you sort of feel like you're the judge, jury, and executioner occasionally?
I do. I like it, actually, because, I've covered a lot of sports in my time, and it's not. And sports media is not the only thing I do. I do tennis and women's basketball. I think it's fair to consider me SI's women's basketball writer, do tennis and do the Olympics. But I like the sports media because it's something that everybody can really relate to, because everybody does watch television in this country, and everybody does have an opinion on announcers and broadcasters. And the fact is, almost like politics, that it's very hard for broadcasters to not answer questions of the media. You know, it's one thing for LeBron James to pretty much blow off a reporter. It's a lot harder for ESPN as an entity to blow off Sports Illustrated if they're calling, because they, quite frankly, they're in the business of public relations like everything else. So one of the things I do enjoy is I get to sort of talk to real people. And even if it's someone who's on television and well-known within the sports media landscape, it's still someone who sort of is of this world, as opposed to, you know, talking to Kobe Bryant or LeBron James, who, at this point, you know, they're sort of celebrities in a different atmosphere. They still do interviews, but it's very hard to get to them one-on-one. It's probably very hard to get to, you know, some kind of eternal truth. So at least when it comes to – it's one of the reasons I like covering women's college basketball, is because I feel like I'm talking to people and I can – I feel like I can bring to readers something something that's real, something that goes beyond cliche. It's also fun. I mean, quite frankly, if you're a television fan, it's just fun to watch and have a voice. And it's a subjective game. I have my opinions. I'm pretty forceful with them. It certainly doesn't mean I'm right. It's ultimately a subjective business. And, I may dislike Chris Berman, and the person next to me may love Chris Berman. Kind of makes it interesting.
Well, that was like Cosell being the most popular and the least popular in the same poll, right?
Exactly. Although today, which is interestingly enough, we have few of those people who would be on both sides. The world has become a little more polarized, I would say, where I don't think Skip Bayless would receive many votes for being the most favorite broadcaster, but would probably receive a ton for least favorite, while conversely, my sense is that a guy like Al Michaels probably is almost universally liked for his calls of the NFL, and I would imagine very few people dislike Al Michaels.
Yeah, I kind of go back to the earthquake with him, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back even beyond the earthquake to his most famous moment calling
Miracle on Ice,
is sort of where it started. And actually, old school guys will go back even further than that and tell you about Al Michaels calling baseball for the Cincinnati Reds as a radio announcer, and then a TV announcer, and he was really good at that. There's a guy, actually, in terms of broadcasting, who really has had an incredible career, pretty much has called everything, including, at least in my country, still the most famous moment in its sporting history.
We've got a couple of minutes left with Richard Deitch from SI, and I've got a couple of things left that I want to ask him. First of all, here we are 40 years off Title IX, and this is the first time in U.S. Olympic history that there's going to be more women than men.
Yeah, that is actually pretty interesting, and it is cool that it happens in this year, and I'm not surprised about that. You know, one of the things that the Olympic movement has tried to do, I think, although, you know, admittedly, everything the quote-unquote IOC does usually is self-serving and money-oriented,
right.
But they have tried to bring more women's sports, I think, under the great big tent. And I saw that the other day, the USOC tweeted that out, that there'd be more women athletes than male athletes. And I think that is pretty cool. And I think another metric which is just interesting is that, you know, one of the things about the Olympics is after the Olympic Games are over, you often see women athletes draw the same stardom and get the same, you know, incredible response as the male athletes do. So, you know, in Olympics past, you know, like a Dara Torres or a Nastia Lukin can come off as maybe not as big as Phelps, but certainly, let's say, as big as a Ryan Lochte. There's probably always one big star of the Games. But, you know, that the Olympics make that interesting. You know, historically, sometimes that's a woman. I'll give you an example. Like, at the end of the Sydney Games, Marion Jones was by far the biggest athlete to come out of those Games, male or female.
Sure.
And I think we'll see that, you know, continuing on. There's a very good chance from these Games, whether it's, at least in this country, Missy Franklin or Allison Felix. You could see, you know, I think the women's gymnastics team is the favorite for gold. So I think you'll see a lot of female stars come out of these Games. And the other thing which I think is great, and part of this is because there's just so much tonnage now in the coverage, is that the American audience is going to be is going to have a chance to see women competing in every sport, whether it's women's soccer, whether it's women's archery, whether it's beach volleyball, whether it's indoor volleyball. And that's a pretty cool thing, and that's not something, you know, that's something still relatively new. You know, you go back to 84, 88, there was not 25 channels where you could see, you know, pretty every moment of the women's basketball team play. But now you can. And I think certainly Title IX is part of that. And that's one of the reasons I love the Olympics. It's because, like, you know, people are into, like, a women's sport in this as a sort of patriotic kind of bent just as much as they are in a men's sport. And it does not happen at any other event other than the Olympics.
Finally, Richard, before we let you go, I've got to go non-sports for a quick second and get your thoughts on the newsroom.
All right. You don't want to talk about rapping. All right, let's talk to the
newsroom. No, we went in on rap, and we're going to go out on Sorkin. I got to say, when I watch that show, I think of your tweets and the sort of the idealistic vision of what journalism should be. And do you think it's overdone?
I appreciate that, though. And some have certainly called me, you know, like a Murrow relic, which I don't know.
But why is that a bad thing?
No, I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, listen, I'm realistic. I work for a major corporation. I try Time Warner. I certainly get it. I think the newsroom aspires sort of to be what journalism should be. But the fact is, we live in a world, and you know this, with corporate overlords, and you know, even the best places like CNN or NBC have some pretty nonsense like. Shows on the air. I mean, you know, I like CNN a lot, even despite their Supreme Court screw up. I trust them as a news source, but they have Piers Morgan on every day.
Right.
Which basically, to me, is kind of clownish. So the hope is that, and this is the one thing, this is what makes me still an optimist on all this stuff, and it sort of goes beyond the newsroom, is that, and this is one of the cool things about Twitter, is that you can always find trusted sources. And you have to trust the reader or the educated reader to find them. And, you know, one of the cool things, like, even about the Supreme Court ruling was the fact that the SCOTUS blog, which is run by these constitutional scholars and, like, incredibly brilliant people, you know, whatever the metric was, they on the day of the ruling, they got, like, 1.6 million page views, which actually made me feel really good that the fact was, like, there was a ton of people who went to, like, this clearly impressive resource to get the Supreme Court review decision, and that's cool. And the larger point is that there are still really good places out there, and I think Sorkin, you know, while he's preaching and sort of way over the top in terms of drama, I think aspires to have a newsroom which tries to do the right thing. The reality of the world that we live in is that it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to sort of sell true journalism these days and get it paid for and sold. You know, I mean, we've seen from both Fox and MSNBC, a lot of times the way you make money now isn't really through straight journalism. It's sort of through this advocacy, quote-unquote, journalism or partisan journalism. Maybe journalism shouldn't even be a word there in that. but that's sort of where, you know, that's sort of where things are now. One great thing about SI is we really still try our best, I think, and I say this even though I'm biased, on an everyday basis, to sort of try to do the right thing when it comes to journalism and attribution and stuff. So there are still great places, and there are still people doing great things in journalism. It's just now a little bit harder to find them and seek them. But if you're an educated reader, you'll find them. You'll find them out there.
Or an educated listener. Richard, thank you so much for your time. This is Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. We're all big fans. Check him out on Twitter. 5,000 people did this weekend, that's for sure.
Next time I'll come up with my rap as we bring it in.
Going to hold you to it.
Pick on Jose Canseco next time. See how that works out.
Exactly.
Thank you, Richard. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be back.